Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Hello and welcome to TMT Podcast. I'm Kate Alexander, tax partner based in London and also a member of our global TMT steering committee. Today we're going to be talking to you about the OECD's proposed changes to the tax regime, which has the potential to have far-reaching consequences for many companies across the globe. What we're going to be doing today is trying to unpack the practical implications for clients and considering in particular what clients should be doing now. To help me unpacking this, I'm delighted to be joined by two of my fellow partners. Firstly, Munia Benadella, who's based in New York but is a Dutch partner, and also Eric Christensen, a US partner based on the West Coast. And together, we're going to be thinking through all the companies, particularly in the US, but also across Europe, and thinking about how this OECD potential changes are going to affect those clients. So what are these changes? As many people will have seen, on the 8th of October this year, it was announced that a political agreement had been reached between the OECD and G20 inclusive framework in relation to a two-pillar approach to adjust tax challenges arising from the digitalization of the economy. It's been something that's been trailed now for several years, and largely the concept has been known for a while. But what is important is that now we have political agreement that this two-pillar approach will be adopted. And therefore, we're turning to the practical implications for governments to consider how they might be implemented. And this means, therefore, as it gets closer to reality, clients need to start thinking about what it really means. So just by way of recap, two pillars refers to really quite different aspects of the tax system. One is a pillar one, which is a quite a narrow, focused attempt to seek to tax companies where there's a perception that they should be taxed more in the market jurisdictions rather than in their home jurisdictions. And it's very much focused on a targeted group of companies. Pillar two has far-reaching consequences for many companies and is really designed to stop the race to the bottom on tax rates and ensure that there are a more acceptable or perceived acceptable rate of tax at a minimum around the world. So starting with pillar one, really that it is a groundbreaking change for potentially a narrow subset of companies. And what is really interesting is we're now looking at a 2023 implementation date, and there's a lot of work being done behind the scenes at the moment with the OECD considering how this is going to be implemented in practice. But a lot of what we're going to talk about today is more on pillar two because it has wider reaching implications for many companies across the board. So, Eric, maybe if I could turn to you straight off and just understand, where are we at with the status of Pillar 2?
Thanks, Kate. Pillar 2 is in design stages. As Kate notes, there is political agreement to move forward with the Pillar 2 solution. But now there's a lot of work to be done to implement and provide a set of rules and mechanisms that all countries agree to. Interestingly, Pillar 2, unlike Pillar 1, will not require a multilateral instrument, according to the OECD. Instead, it's kind of voluntary compliance with the principles of Pillar 2, and then agreement to implement this body of rules that is under design currently. You know, why exactly a multilateral instrument is not required is not entirely clear to me, but OECD has made the decision that there won't be a multilateral instrument, but rather a governing body of rules that everyone will sign on to. In terms of timing, we expect to see more detailed descriptions of these this framework of rules sometime in 2022 with an effective date in 2023.
That's great, Eric. Thank you for that. And I suppose just interested, Munia, in terms of a lot of relevance across the globe here, but my understanding is that the EU has particular interest in Pillar 2. So what's the EU's take on it at the moment?
Yeah, thanks, Kate. As you can imagine, the EU is going to be once again ahead of the curve when it comes to implementation of the rules through the instrument of a directive, an EU directive, especially now that some critical EU countries, such as Ireland, are on board with the inclusive framework. As you know, for tax measures within the EU, a unanimous vote is required. In fact, the only EU member state that did not formally commit to the two-pillar proposals through the inclusive framework is Cyprus, because simply they're not part of the inclusive framework. However, through an announcement by the Ministry of Finance issued on October 9, Cyprus in fact highlighted that it is in alignment with the principles governing this two-pillar plan of the inclusive framework agreement. And so it seems that with that, all EU member states are on board with these plans. The European Commission is planning to propose a directive for the implementation of Pillar 2 in the EU, in fact, in the next 2 weeks, even before the holidays. The exact timing will depend on the publication of the Pillar 2 model rules, I'm sure. By issuing the EU directive this month, they plan to have the directive go to Council for discussion during the French presidency, early January 2022. With this directive, the European Commission will follow the content of Pillar 2 model rules. The directive will, of course, be limited to the EU and taxes that arise within the EU. The only adjustment that the European Commission was planning to make in a directive when we last discussed it with them some time ago was to extend the income inclusion rule to purely domestic situations for purpose of ensuring that there is no unequal treatment, which could create issues with the fundamental freedoms. This would imply that the subsidiaries that are in the same jurisdiction as the ultimate parent would also be subject to the inclusion rule. Again, this is an adjustment to give more certainty within the EU. So that's for Pillar 2.
Thanks, Munio. And I suppose just at sort of standing back here, the concept on Pillar 2 is that 15% is the minimum tax rate around the world. And depending, as you just mentioned, there's an income inclusion rule or there may be denials of deductions. But however that's achieved, effectively, it's the 15% is the minimum tax. Again, I think remembering it is subject to limitations, isn't it, Munio, in terms of sort of turnover restrictions? That's correct, isn't it?
That's correct. Yes, indeed.
So we may still see potentially within Europe a difference depending on size, where some groups might still be subject to lower tax rates than 15%, depending on their size.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's important to realize that with Pillar 2 and also with Pillar 1, these will be tax systems in addition to what we already have today, right? So tax systems not applicable to each and every company. But as you mentioned, the size is going to define whether these companies have to deal with one or two tax systems in the new reality.
So with that in mind, just turning now sort of, Eric, to what should companies be doing now in preparing themselves for this potential parallel tax regime that's going to get implemented?
Thanks, Kate. Pillar 2 is, in some respects, at least for U.S. multinationals, it's kind of a trailing piece of legislation in that the targeted abuse in Pillar 2 was the old U.S. deferral regime, right, where there were controlled foreign corporations, CFCs of a U.S. multinational, and the income of those CFCs was not taxed on a current basis. Since tax reform and the new GILTI regime, that's no longer a problem from the policy perspective, because the income of these CFCs does flow up to the U.S. parent and is taxed on a current basis in the hands of the U.S. parent. So what should companies be doing? I mean, I think the important step to take at this point is to begin to model out effective tax rates of the subsidiaries around the world. U.S. multinationals, again, the GILTI regime ought to be considered an income inclusion regime that takes most U.S. multinationals out of Pillar 2, or at least exempts them from the application of Pillar 2. However, foreign parented groups, including those that, especially those that don't have an income inclusion rule, need to begin to model out the consequences. And one of the interesting aspects of the design of Pillar 2 that I mentioned before is that the effective rate is going to be based on applicable financial statements. And that's all we have from the OECD at this point in the blueprint rules. So there are a lot of questions to be asked about book tax differences, for example, loss carry forwards, for example. How does one determine the effective rate in any given country? So I think that the most important step for especially non-US companies, but some US companies as well, is to think about their effective tax rate modeling on a country-by-country basis and determine whether they might be subject to the top-up tax imposed on the income inclusion rule or the denial of deductions imposed as a result of the under-tax payments rule.
Thanks, Eric. And the other point, just to go to you, Munia, now, is like, is this now all clear how each individual territory is going to be implementing, or is there still an opportunity for companies to engage with governments around the world in terms of the changes they may be making to their tax regimes?
Yeah, Kate, I think definitely the theme today is that nothing is really clear, and including how countries will be implementing. What we know is that there's political commitment, but that's really all we know, right? So it's going to be very interesting to see how the EU directive, what it will look like, that is going to indicate, I would say, some level of standard, at least for the EU countries. But even there, we don't know whether it's going to be a directive with all kinds of options, just minimum standards, and then we can see that countries go further, or just a fixed set of rules. So I would say to that question that it's still very much uncertain, and that definitely engaging with governments, it's not too late. I mean, it's getting late in the game, but it's probably still good to pursue that route, even if it's just to provide feedback from the business perspective, because that's one big, I would say, complaint in this process, that there hasn't really been much time for businesses to provide feedback and input.
Absolutely agree. And just to insert a comment, the Singapore EDB, but also their internal revenue, is very open to hearing comments from the business community. As we speak, they are soliciting comments.
Okay, because that's one point then to just clarify for people in terms of the modeling we're doing here. So is my understanding correct, Munia, that it's actually optional for countries to decide whether to adopt these rules into their tax system?
So for Pillar 2, yes, it is. We've seen different, I would say, directions. It's going to different directions, multilateral instrument or no multilateral instrument, but it is going to be optional in terms of whether or not to implement. Again, EU being an exception if the directive goes through. But at the same time, don't really keep my hopes up because, you know, given the political dynamic, I would say the pandemic also has a big role to play here in countries needing to, gain revenue and push the envelope. I would still expect that a lot of countries will just continue this route and implement how things will look like and whether we will have one system as the OECD would like to see. That is very unlikely. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of discrepancies between implementation in different countries.
Okay, now that's really helpful. So what I'm hearing is, in terms of clients at the moment, it's sort of identifying where your companies are located and are they in a jurisdiction with a rate less than 15%, encouraging people to engage with those governments to see where they are going to be implementing it, modeling out the consequences. And then I suppose, Eric, to the extent you model it out, I mean, is that just your new tax rate, or are there opportunities for clients to be then rethinking about their structures that potentially can make a difference to the ultimate effect of Pillar 2?
I think there are restructuring opportunities, but it would, of course, pursuing any of them would be premature in the absence of, the final rules, just based on kind of the modeling of, what we think the rules might look like. Should not be the basis for a decision to restructure. There has been talk from OECD of, forget if they called it an anti-abuse rule, but you know, restructurings that were designed to blunt the impact of Pillar 2 will be scrutinized under the framework rules that are being designed. So I do think that it is worth thinking about restructuring to optimize the outcome under Pillar 2, or at least to minimize the damage. But of course, it's premature to do any of that at this point.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating, Eric. And no doubt we'll be coming back and doing another one of these in time once we know the rules and looking about the opportunity to have any control over this. Because I think that's one of the things we've been hearing from clients is the increased compliance burden, if nothing else, is a big cause of a concern. And the uncertainty is never good for clients because it ultimately will affect earnings per share as a direct line cost. That is so interesting. Thank you. I'm conscious that, as ever, there's not a lot of time to cover all of these points in one session. But I suppose just in closing, I did want to just highlight for those companies that are potentially affected by Pillar 1, just to sort of highlight those things that they should be thinking about. And just to sort of in closing, just recapping that Pillar 1 is really focused on a subset of the very largest of companies with a global turnover of over 20 billion euros. It's agnostic to the type of company now, although extractives and regulated financial services are excluded. And it's really about a reallocation of what's called the residual profit. And I think for a lot of groups there, it's the same things largely, isn't it, Munir, in terms of what we should be doing in terms of modeling, looking at the impact. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's, as critical, I would say, as for Pillar 2. At the same time with Pillar 1, we have the current, the recent agreement on the digital services taxes and the fact that they will be creditable against amount A. So it's already relevant to monitor that as well. It is indeed applicable to the largest companies, but we also have to keep in mind on the longer term that threshold of 20 billion euros will be reduced to 10 billion. So still a high threshold, but that will expand the scope. So modeling is going to be critical for amount A for sure.
But I think it's fair to say that the detail of Pillar 1 is a little bit less clear, even less clear than Pillar 2. Pillar 2 isn't clear yet, but Pillar 1 is still a little bit way behind, isn't it? And I just in terms of key dates, I suppose, just in closing for clients to look out with, I mean, the next big thing is going to be actually the model rules for Pillar 2. And when are we expecting those, Munir?
The model rules for Pillar 2 were initially, the date that was being circulated was December 3rd. Well, obviously, we passed that. So right now, through the grapevines, we hear December 15th. So any moment now, I would say.
Any moment now. So next week, next 2 weeks might be a busy week then if we get the rules on the 15th and then the EU directive on the 22nd. So it's really going to be a watch this space, I think, for clients, but just really encouraging people now that this is moving out of the joys of tax academia into reality. So as we've been saying throughout this call, I think engaging with the process that are now still continuing to lobbying, but really starting to get into the nuts and bolts of what it might mean. Because for the clients we've been advising, it's only when you start to do that, do you realize there's other points you probably want to be raising in your lobbying that potentially are unintended consequences or just more adverse consequences than perhaps the rules suggest.
What one, you know, additional kind of complexity in all of this is US tax reform. And if and when that passes, you know, the U.S. is suddenly going to have its own 15% minimum tax imposed at the ultimate parent entity level if it's a U.S. entity. And so the modeling, there's a bit of a priority rule question. You know, will the U.S. 15% rate impact anything that the OECD is doing and vice versa? So that's just another element in the mix.
And we couldn't do a podcast without mentioning US tax reform, could we? So there we are. And on that bombshell, Eric, Munir, thank you very much. And thank you everyone for listening.